So I'm going to say a few words about what this practice is about, which is basically what I was talking about. It's funny, these Taisho, which are somewhat formal Zen talks by the teacher, and often come from a spontaneous place. There might be a little preparation, but not too much. Over a long period of time, appear to be saying the same thing. Just different approaches to the same one thing, which is really what this practice is. It's different approaches, unique to each person, to the same one thing. Now, what is this thing that we are approaching through our practice? What are we approaching? One thing that I can tell you is that this practice, which has been called Zen Buddhism, I try to avoid naming it because I think it then sets it apart from everything else. But just to use names, this Zen practice is not a self-improvement exercise. It's not about turning yourself into a better person or something different than what you are right now, or getting rid of something that is holding you back. Now, some of these things may occur just as a byproduct of being alive and of all sorts of activities, not just Zazen, but the things you do in your everyday life, the way you conduct yourself, your work, people you meet, experiences you have, perhaps psychotherapy, all these different approaches, reading, philosophizing. We're always changing. We're always hopefully growing. But this practice is not about achieving some particular improved me. This is really important. Now, at the same time, and related to that, it's not about adopting a set of beliefs or a set of practices that are rituals. In other words, they're done for the sake of something else, done ritualistically. So a lot of religion involves that, ritualistic behaviors, underlying which are certain superstitious beliefs that doing these rituals will somehow lead you to the happy place, which some people call heaven or whatever you might want to call it. Call it enlightenment. So ritualistic behavior is not a part of this Zen practice. Beliefs, in other words, accumulating a set of thoughts about yourself and the world and what is important and what isn't important, and holding to these thoughts and ideas as not just representations of a direction in which we want to move, but as the very embodiment of what we're doing. Now, that's a very key part of religions, this whole thing about belief. Belief in events that occurred hundreds or thousands of years ago. Belief in various things that no one's ever seen but are taught in a book written by someone who knows who, maybe God. It's not that at all. Now, all of those things, beliefs, rituals, practices, all are in the service of changing yourself from something that is inadequate, less than perfect, defective in some way, into some perfected being who will then be allowed to pass through some lattice, call it the pearly gates or whatever you want to call it. So, what is this about then? There was a contemporary student, I read this in one of the books by Philip Kaplow, and it stuck in my mind. He was writing about his awakening experience, and you will, along the course of the way, have various awakening experiences. These openings of your mind to something that was always there that you didn't notice before. He had a particularly profound awakening experience. And this is what he wrote. He said, "Just to be is a supremely total act." just to be is a supremely total act. Another Zen student, this is many years ago, probably just about 100 years ago, it's a young woman, I quote her quite often, her name was Yayoi Iwasaki. She had a series of profound awakening experiences on her deathbed. She was dying from TB, and then wrote a series of letters about her experiences to her teacher, who was a Zen master, Harada Roshi, famous Zen master in Japan back in the early 1900s. And she wrote, after one of these particularly profound awakenings, lying in her bed doing zazen, "What a relief to discover that just as I am, I lack nothing." Now, these two comments by students of Zen, devoted practitioners of this thing we're doing here called zazen, point so directly at what this is about, more than any book, ritual, belief, anything. Now, nowhere in these statements was even the slightest indication that there was an attempt to change who they were, become something that they weren't before, to achieve something that they didn't have to begin with. This harkens back to one of the statements of the Buddha, which I particularly resonate with and love, and it was the final statement he made to his disciples on his deathbed. And he said, let me get my mind together. He said, "All component things are subject to decay. Work out your own salvation with diligence." Work out your own salvation with diligence. Salvation from what? Salvation from what? From thoughts about yourself, ideas about yourself, ideas about the world, judgments about the world, all these things, which are component things, and none of them last. And even if you got them all set up so perfectly, all the ducks lined up in a row, everything perfected, they can't last. They never do. Look to your own past experience to confirm that. Times when everything seems so perfect, and sometime later, it wasn't like that at all. Nothing stays with us. Now, another thing the Buddha said, and this is important to understand. He said, "Truly I gain nothing from complete unexcelled enlightenment." What a profound statement. "Truly I gained nothing." There was nothing gained. What happened is he awoke to some original condition, always there. Didn't newly achieve it upon seeing it. And were there anything needed to be rid of to uncover it, it was simply his ideas and thoughts. So it's very important, not just starting out in this practice, but all the way through this practice, particularly for advanced practitioners who have had some measure of experience and answered koans and had whatever awakenings they may have had, to continually remind themselves that this is not a self-improvement project and that just to be is a supremely total act, exactly as you are. And zazen is the not the method of getting there, but the act of doing that. So zazen truly, true zazen, correct zazen, which is something we're all working on practicing here, is the very act of being. It's the act of being. It's the act of non-attainment. It's the act of non-perfection. It's the act of being precisely what you are in each moment. It's the act of putting down the effort to change yourself. Letting go of ideas, beliefs, thoughts, so that this is not a ritual aiming at something that will come down the pike later as a result of hours and hours of ritualized zazen. What a remarkable, precious, rare thing. Now, what is the very opposite of this? Something that I've noticed lately, some of you know that I'm a cyclist. I spend a lot of time on the road on my road bike. Lately, I've gotten into mountain biking just because I get away from the most horrible part of cycling, which is drivers. And my experience has been over the past couple of months on the road is that drivers, and particularly drivers of pickup trucks, I didn't know why this was at first, have become particularly aggressive and hostile in a very scary way. I mean, yelling out the windows, gunning it and then buzzing you, so they come real close to you and they gun it and then they just floor it totally so that exhaust is like blowing in your face and you're coughing. And this happens, I would say, almost every time I'm out on the road. Now, I haven't changed anything. I'm wearing the same clothing. I have the same bicycle. I ride the same way. But something has changed. So I thought about it a couple of days ago when a pickup truck did this. And I realized that we are all immersed in a current political environment in which some people, perhaps selected out by those who drive big pickup trucks, I don't know, I'm not impugning anyone who owns a pickup truck. But some of these politicians are dividing, pointing at others who are different and looking at them as the enemy, something to be blocked by a wall, ejected from the country, prevented from entering the country, prevented from carrying out their everyday activities, like using the bathroom of their choice if they happen to be transsexual. Many things like this. Some of these people they're pointing at have committed the crime of being female, having an XX rather than XY, and various disparaging remarks about them because of their genetic composition. And this has, I think, given people permission to see anyone different from them, even if the difference is just something in their mind and not real. If the person in the pickup truck stopped and started to talk to me and might realize that we knew each other or we were friends of friends, we had similar interests. But it's just the notion that someone might be different is enough to allow you, give you permission to express your hostility. Now, what is this? This is no different than trying to improve yourself. Honestly, trying to improve yourself is pointing out some part of yourself that shouldn't be there, that isn't right, that isn't who you really are, that doesn't match your idea of what an enlightened person is like, should be like, doesn't match your idea of how someone ought to be, and therefore should be gotten rid of. So there's a certain kind of a subtle internal violence to that, a self-criticism. And this can get very embedded in our practice of Zen, as any religion, and as politics, and as many other endeavors in life. Now, in our everyday life, we make attempts to improve our circumstances, get an education, be a better person. All of those things are important. But in those endeavors, we begin to forget that just to be is a supremely total act. Please take whatever comfortable position you want. You don't have to stay in any particular position. So this is the core issue here. This is what we always have to remind ourselves. Now, we do it in our zazen in the way we deal with thinking. All of this rejecting, hostility, judgment, should and shouldn't, attempts to be better, all involve thinking, making a comparison to an idea in one's mind that is the template of perfection, and trying to match it or trying to get rid of things that prevent you from matching it. All of these are founded on thinking. So in our zazen, we learn how to not get rid of our thinking. That's just more of the same. That's saying thinking isn't good. I have to get rid of it. I have to do battle with it. Only when I stop thinking will I really be doing mindfulness practice. No. Mindfulness practice is the recognition that anything being is a totality. A thought is. That's its totality. A sensation in your legs is. That's its totality. You are. That's your totality. So we enter this world of totality fully. We have a method to do it. We learn this method. I've taught someone this method tonight, and it involves continual refinement. But it never involves getting rid of anything, checking yourself, standing apart and criticizing. It's really about letting go of all those activities by simply seeing that they are, observing their, as I put it, sensation. So rather than get involved with the ideas that beset us and torment us, we observe the sensation of the ideas themselves, the sensation of thinking, sensation of judging. What does that feel like? How do I know I'm judging right now? How did I detect that? What was the sensation? And then noticing that the sensation, like any other sensation, is there because of causes and conditions. If in that moment things were different, something else might have appeared, but it was just that. That had to be. There's no point in doing battle with it. And as the Buddha said, all component things are subject to decay. It's not going to last. A moment later, it'll be completely forgotten and something will take its place. So we develop in our zazen this dispassionate, flowing attentiveness to something that you might call now-ness. Now-ness. We leave behind comparisons and names and judgments. And as we do that, we begin to enter a very glistening, alive, present, ever-changing, flowing world of sensation. This nowness. We peer deeply into it. And we might do it through a method such as counting or following the breath. Shikantaza, koan, is also such a different approaches. But it is essentially this. It's about waking up to things as they are, not making them into something better, different, getting rid of things. Basically, not being someone in a pickup truck gunning past a cyclist. That cyclist is you too. This person inside that you feel doesn't measure up or lacks something is you too. It's a part of your big self. It can't be cut off. It has reasons for being there. And if one embraces it, it becomes part of the whole. It's expressing this beingness. This nowness, rather than blocking your path. So, I will. We have a little bit of extra time here, so I'm going to read a koan. This is from the Mumon Kan, and I probably won't say too much about it, but I think it reflects some of the things we were just talking about. So this is case number 38, and. The title of it in this particular translation is A Cow Goes Through a Window. It's also been translated as A Buffalo Goes Through a Window. This giant cow or water buffalo often is viewed as the symbol of awakening in Zen, just to give you a background to it. But this is A Cow Goes Through the Window, and you don't even need to know that to get something from this koan. So the case goes like this, and Goso was a Zen master. Goso said, to give an example, it is like a cow going through a window. Its head, horns, and four legs all pass through. Why doesn't its tail pass through? Here I've been sitting for all these years, feeling more free, more in the present moment, more compassionate. See how we begin to step back and judge our progress. And yet, this thing always hangs me up. Why won't this go through? Why do I have this thing, this issue, this problem? Why is the world this way? Why is that person treating me this way? All these tales blocking us from getting through this window. Now, I'll give you a little history behind this. This is actually about back in this day and age, and I don't know if this was Japan or China, there were abattoirs where they would sacrifice, kill cows for meat. And the cow would be placed in a pen. It was actually like a house. It had a lattice, a window with a lattice, and a door that was locked. And just to be extra safe in case the cow escaped from this and then would not be able to go to the abattoir, there was a moat, like a ditch, surrounding it. They dig a ditch so that the cow would get trapped in the ditch. So this is kind of a little play on words, so to speak. It's often translated going through the lattice. So to give an example, like a cow going through a lattice. Its head, its horns, and all four legs pass through, but why doesn't its tail get stuck? So here's the commentary, and then I'll read the verse. So the commentary by Mumon is this. If you can penetrate to the point of this koan, open your Zen eye to it, and give a turning word, you will then be able to repay the four obligations above and help the three existences below. If you still cannot do so, reflect on the tail single-heartedly until you can really grasp it as your own. This is so critical to this koan. Reflect on the tail single-heartedly. What tail is this? What tail is it for you right now? Single-heartedly, until you can really grasp it as your own. Now the verse is wonderful. Remember this story about the cow and the moat and waiting to go to the go a cropper, as they might say. So the verse goes like this. If it passes through, it falls into a ditch. If it turns back, it is destroyed. This little bit of a tail, how extremely marvelous. Remember what that student said. He said, just to be is a supremely total act. Just this thing holding you back from passing through a lattice of perfection. So you have the idea that you're better than everyone else, more awakened, more enlightened. You've got your shit together. What kind of a ditch is this to fall into? We don't let that happen in this practice. It's constantly working on refining. Never reach the end of this practice. But turning back, giving up, giving into identification with a little self with characteristics, that's what I really am. I'm not anything but that, this little self. And as they say, life sucks and then you die. So if you turn back from this wonderful, rare practice that we have luckily stumbled upon, you will be destroyed. It will be destroyed. So this little bit of a tail, this thing that we tend to do battle with, but that really is part of our whole self. How extremely marvelous. So we'll end there today. And, oh.